I think seminary is probably a lot like college, just college in general, insofar as that it's kind of a melting pot of a lot of different people from all over, you know, different parts of the country, sometimes different countries altogether, and different backgrounds, different socioeconomic statuses, different, you know, city kids and country kids, and you get all that kind of blended together in seminary. It's quite an interesting mix, medley that you have going on, but with that you learn that not everybody comes from the same background. Not everybody comes with the same kind of approach to life in general. And, you know, when we were in seminary, we had a 6 a.m. holy hour. Every day, 6 a.m. And so we'd go from 6 to 7 for a holy hour, and then we'd have mass, and then we'd have breakfast, and then go to class. So it was a pretty routine thing. But there's a lot of guys, and one guy I remember in particular that just could not get up. He could not get his self out of bed. And we'd send guys up. He wouldn't show up to the holy hour. We'd send guys up there, and sure enough, you could hear his alarm blaring all the way down the hall, and he's just sound asleep. And so he couldn't get out of bed. And so we asked him, like, didn't you have to go to school before this? Didn't you have? And he's like, well, yeah, but my mom would always come in, and she'd pull the blankets off of me and turn up the light, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, are you serious? And we had house chores. So we all were assigned chores, so we had to do certain things, clean up the kitchen or, you know, whatever it is. My house chore, I got assigned the worst one, the bathrooms. It's a college dorm full of guys. Nobody wanted to clean the bathroom. So I said, you know what? Okay, I'll take the bathrooms. And I was assigned to it. There's two of us, me and this other guy. And I said, all right, I will take the toilets and the showers. That's the worst. That is absolutely the worst job in the house. I will do that. You clean the showers and mop the floor. And he said, well, how do you do that? And I said, how do you do what? He said, well, how do you mop the floor? He was 20 years old and had never pushed a mop in his life. And I was scandalized. Like, how do you make it to 20 years old and never mop a floor? And guess what? Mom did it for me. Right? There is no expectations. There is no chores or whatever. And so for me as a farm kid from a big family, like, man, I remember I was doing laundry at like 5, 6 years old. When it was your 6th birthday, you were put on the chore rotation and you had chores to do. So, but again, just those kind of different backgrounds of things. So, but when you have somebody who's had everything laid out in front of them, has had everything handed them on silver platter, has always gotten their way, because when they throw a temper tantrum, mom and dad are going to fold like a house of cards, and then that person grows up and tries to enter into society, and the rest of us have to deal with them. That's a major problem, isn't it? For those of you who have ever tried hiring somebody, you know what I'm talking about. It's a major headache, because interiorly they have failed to build up the resistance or the discipline, the internal discipline. That's why we discipline our kids. That's why we assign chores to our kids. That's why we have these expectations, and we don't give in when they give temper tantrums. It's actually really, really important and good parenting to be able to discipline and to set those boundaries. But here's the deal. God is a father. He has revealed himself as father, and he does the same things with us. Did you catch that in the second reading today? The reading from St. Paul to the Hebrews? Brothers and sisters, have you forgotten the exhortation addressed to you as children? Here's the exhortation. My son, this is in quotes, my son, do not disdain the discipline of the Lord, or lose heart when you are reproved by him. For he whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son that he acknowledges. In other words, just as we have to, it is necessary to to discipline our children and help them to establish that interior discipline, God does the same thing for us. God tells us no sometimes. There are some times when we have to learn through pain, through difficulty, through hardship, and God wants us to. Sometimes those hard things that come up in our lives, the Lord, He has permitted it in His mercy for our benefit. I'll never forget, we've all heard 1,000 homilies in our lifetime, right? And most of them go in at one ear, and they move us the needle a little bit, and they go out the ear, and we forget them. But there's the ones that stick with you. You know what I'm talking about? Those ones that throughout life that you can go back like, oh man, I remember that homily. And for me, one of those homilies that I remember was my first semester of seminary. The rector, who was in charge, the priest in charge, Father William Baer, he gave a homily that first semester about suffering. And he said something that up to that point, I was, 21, 22, I never heard this before. But he part of his homily was, if you have never experienced suffering, you better start praying that the Lord gives you some real soon. It's like, wait, what? What? Pray that you experience suffering? Yes. Because suffering can be, not in and of itself, and we're not sadists, we're not going for suffering just so that we can suffer, but because it proves us and it tests us and we grow through it. The second part of the letter to the Hebrews here. At the time, all discipline seems like a cause not for joy, but for pain. I don't know a lot of teenagers that are going to thank you for grounding them. It's not a cause for joy. They're not super happy about this. It's not a cause for joy, but a cause for pain. Yet, later, it brings the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who are trained by it. It is a necessary good for us. Think about like the military. Now, I myself have never served in the military, but I'm very grateful for those who have. I've always dreamed about being a military chaplain and serving in the Army like Father Capon, but I don't think that's going to be a reality. But the idea, though, of military, imagine if you showed up for boot camp. And they just say, hey guys, welcome. It's, the water park's over here and the pina coladas are over there. Kick up your heels. It's going to be a great time. What a massive disservice it would be to our men and women if they went through that in boot camp and then they showed up on the battlefield and just got annihilated. Yes, they have to go crawl through the mud and do push-ups and sit-ups and all that kind of stuff. It is necessary. And mercy. So this loops back around to our gospel today. When someone asks him, Lord, will only a few people be saved? Once again, Jesus does not give a yes or a no response. Yes, only a few people will be saved. Everyone's going to make. He just kind of sidesteps the question. Lord, will only a few people be saved? Listen to his response. Strive to enter through the narrow gate. For many, I tell you, will attempt to enter, but will not be strong enough. Will many people be saved? It's not a yes or a no, so to speak. It's a question. Strive to enter through the narrow gate. They will attempt to enter, but they will not be strong enough. Why will they not be strong enough? Because they lack the discipline. And so as a good mother or a good father, yes, it is absolutely required of you to instill discipline in your kids. And it can be as creative as you want. My mom, she could put the KGB to shame in terms of her ways of disciplining. But I'm telling you, her favorite one was, my least favorite, she would make us stand in the living room and hold hands, and we'd have to look each other in the eye and sing, Let There Be Peace on Earth. And to this day, it worked. I'm telling you, it worked. It ruined that song for the rest of my life. I still, to this day, I hate that song. But by golly, I knew if we were going to get in a fight, I'm like, I don't want to sing that stupid song again. So I, guess what? I didn't. It actually was a great deterrent. But she had the wherewithal to lead and to discipline. So the last story I'll share is this, that, and I wish I remember the name of the guy who this happened to, but I heard the story of some guy who played in the NFL, and he was, you know, amazing athlete. This is back in like the 70s or 80s, and he had this promising career ahead of him. He was super high draft pick, all this, the world was at his fingertips, you know, and the very first preseason game blew out his knee, completely destroyed his knee, and ended his career right there. And I remember the story I heard was from the coach who watched this guy being carted off the field into the locker room, and as he's being carted off the field, he's smiling, and he started singing, and he said, I cannot wait to see what the next thing God has in store for me. I cannot wait to see the next thing that God has in store for me. That guy gets it. And when St. Paul says, all things work for the good of those who believe, we have the choice, brothers and sisters. What we don't have the choice is whether or not we suffer. You're going to suffer. You're going to have hardship. You're going to have difficulty. That's just how it is. But what we have the choice is, do we see it as like, woe is me, I'm going to throw a pity party and feel bad for myself, and I'm going to be mad at God because he's a meanie? Or can I stop and ask, how is the Lord asking me to grow right now? How is he seeking to lead me? How is this going to work for my benefit in a way maybe I don't quite know right now, because it's not a cause for joy at the moment, seems like a cause for sadness. But if we can interiorly make that shift from to trust, that is what builds us in discipline. That is what builds us in hope. And that is what allows us to trust that our God is a good Father.